Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil in the ones and twos. We are here. We're back like we always are every week. Special guest today, WLWT-TV Channel 5's anchor, Cherie Pallello. Looking forward to having Cherie on. Sherry, great get for us on the podcast.
You know what? I follow Cherie on Twitter, and she mentioned that she's been here. She's kind of celebrating her 20-year, like, I'm working in Cincinnati anniversary. Even though she's from here, she'd gone to, the, like, smaller stations elsewhere. And I have been thinking, because my 20-year anniversary is coming up at the end of the year of, like, being here. And so I was like, I think that she and I should talk about that because we really just covered it this whole time. And she was, you know, a beat reporter when she started, and I got to know her, like, just from being at the same assignments and everything. And
you also have – yeah, you have that unique perspective of working with your spouse.
I know. Well. When she got married to him, I texted her and was just, like, joking, like, wait till you have your first fight in the newsroom. You know what? I don't think they fight a lot. And Alex and I, every once in a while, but there's a frosty moment. And we never, like, bring a fight into the newsroom. But we are a married couple, and sometimes we fight. And, like, you know, pre-pandemic more than now. You know, every once in a while, it would be we're not talking. Although we're both so busy, we joke. Like, we never see it's almost like we don't work together. We never see each other in the office.
What's the one the married couple on one of the radio stations, they're called Married with Microphones.
And I know what you're talking about.
And then, so we'll call Cherie and Mike Married with Teleprompters. Do we call you and Alex Married with Notepads?
Yes, I guess so.
or Married with iPhones.
You would be shocked at how many notepads are piled up around the Coolidge house in, like, various places. When I clean, like, that's part of it, of, like, putting, you know, the notebook of, like, the notebooks on the kitchen table, like, whose handwriting's in there, they have to go to our respective desks. And, like, that's part of cleaning in the Coolidge house, putting the notebooks in the right spot.
And Alex, he likes him some papers.
He does. We just shut the door to his office and pretend it doesn't exist.
Do you have your own office, too, at home?
It's more I have, you know, one of my really close friends stays with me a lot. And so my desk is in that room.
Okay.
But I float around kitchen table and everything, depending on what I'm working on.
Anyway, looking forward to having Cherie. And but first, our political chat, our little fireside chat that we like to have every week. And Sherry, you know, I keep seeing the, you know, news stories or things pop up on Twitter or even conversations I have with you even, that pedestrian safety continues to be an ongoing, issue, problem? I don't know. It becomes an ongoing topic.
Here, I'm going to give you a word. You ready?
Yeah.
Crisis.
Crisis. Wow. In the city of Cincinnati. And what is going on with that? Is City Hall doing anything?
You know, people are really paying attention to this. We've just had really this spate, and it's like, is it higher? Is it not? It is higher. It's not unusual, much like the violence problem that's happening. Like, Cincinnati's not in some bubble. Like, people are driving more erratic. There's something going on. It's a it's a societal issue, but that doesn't mean it doesn't need to be solved and fixed. And people are very, very upset about what's going on. And so I would say it would be the number one priority of what's coming out of City Hall right now, really what they're talking about, what they're trying to do. And they're looking at the numbers, crunching the data, you know. But all of this violence has really, over these last few years, has really, you know, accumulated into the idea that the police department is dealing with that. Mm. You hear about all these things. We have ShotSpotter. Well, someone has to follow all the bullet shots that come through there. We have all this technology, like, related to violence. Well, our police officers were short-staffed as it is. And our police officers have been really working on this violence problem, and perhaps not. They're not on the streets, you know, issuing citations. Now, there's a huge community policing component to this, and the police officers, of course, are like, we do pull people over, and we talk.
Sure.
And we have conversations, and that's what true community policing is. And
that's
so the answer is not necessarily more citations, but what is it? So, you know, City Hall seems to be trying to solve this problem, but when I'm looking at it, I don't know. I feel like the experts need to solve it. You know who those are? the police officers.
Public safety people, yeah.
You know, and so this seems like something, it's emanating out of City Hall. I'm interested to see about some real solutions because you can add crosswalks, put in some bump outs, slow some traffic down.
Yeah.
But those are incremental things about what's happening here. And I don't know what the solution is. And so far, I haven't really heard it yet.
Is there a couple places in the city where pedestrian safety is more at risk than other parts of the city based on the data?
It
is. Okay.
You know, there's just these places that have become like these speedways in various parts. I will say every neighborhood thinks it's the worst there.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's a telling thing because how your citizens feel matters.
Certainly.
You know, you can't be like, oh, it's actually worse in this neighborhood over there, so we're just going to have to go over and fix it over there. This is a feeling that's like coming up. This is our children crossing streets. This is people being hit. I can't believe the number of these terrible crashes where people drive off and leave the scene. And that, speaking of like a societal issue. And so I think that you expect this summer that really to be like a huge topic.
Yeah. I can definitely see where, yeah, that's certainly every neighborhood, people speeding through. And you're right. Like different things have been tried, speed bumps. What's the thing they call traffic calming where you basically kind of landscape the center of the street to sort of make it. Yeah, because
it has to do with your peripheral vision and what's there, like a bump out. And it's – even if it's just – you don't have to like pave over all the lanes. But if it goes down to two lanes, just let's say it's four lanes, it goes down to two lanes for a little bit, you're slowing down because you have to merge into those two lanes. Mm-hmm. And so it's cheaper than just, you know, doing whole road fixes. And I applaud City Hall for doing like some of these things that don't cost a lot of money. Like, and you can say, well, at least we could do this, right? But this is going to take a whole 52 neighborhood solution somehow. I mean, I was crossing the street today. I ran out to grab lunch and there was a crosswalk and not one car stopped. I caught people's eyes. I mean, I'm not crossing at that crosswalk. I ended up walking up to the light because at least there's a light because no one stopped at the crosswalk. It's like, I'm standing right here. I'm looking at you and looking at the crosswalk sign. Like, and honestly, like the number one thing everybody can do is you do have to do that. You have to be looking and mindful. I'm as guilty as anyone of being on my phone when I'm walking all the time. But when you're on these city streets, you gotta be on your phone. You have to be looking.
That's right.
You have to be looking.
No, I'm glad you brought this up, or maybe you brought up for us to talk about. Because when you think about that list of basic services that you want from your local government, you know, we always talk about, you know, litter pickup and trash pickup and the streets plowed when it snows and, you know, our streets safe from crime, and you want your street, you don't want people, you want to be able to be safe walking across the street as well. That's certainly a big thing, I think, for City Hall to tackle, and the experts who are there and the experts in the public safety department and the police department. That's their job to solve this. And it's your job, as always, to hold them accountable for it. And you will be.
And watch for Patty Newberry.
Patty Newberry.
She's newish to us, returning after many years of, you know, teaching our youngest journalism minds at Miami University. And so she's covering transportation for us. And I literally told her this morning, I was like, I think there's more transportation news because you're here. I don't know. It's like the chicken and the egg. Because there's been a lot going on with all of transportation stuff. But anyway, you guys.
That's good.
Watch for that stuff to come out over the summer.
Absolutely. Let's shift gears and bring on our special guest. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm pleased to welcome WLWT Channel 5 anchor, Cherie Polello. Cherie, how are you?
Oh, hi, guys. How are you?
It's great to hear your voice, and exciting things going on with you right now, huh?
Which part? Some of it's exciting, some of it's a pain in the butt. Yeah, no, really good stuff. I mean, most of it personal stuff. We're in the process of moving three kids, two dogs, and a cat into an apartment temporarily while we wait for a house to be ready. And so, yeah, it's an adventure for sure.
Do you have to divide everything up, like the things you're taking to the apartment and then things you're putting in storage?
Exactly. It's like 90% went to storage and 10% went to an apartment. But you know what's funny is it's kind of nice. Like, I realized over the weekend that simple living is really good and easy, right? So I think we took 8 plates, 8 cups, a couple coffee mugs, a couch, and a couple stools and beds. You know, it's like we really just took as little as possible, and it's working out. So I don't know. I might decide to just stay here, or like send the rest of the family to the house, and I'll just keep the apartment.
Are you building your? Is this,
I understand.
You building your dream home?
No. So I am from the west side of Cincinnati, but I grew up really west out in Indiana, in St. Leon, Indiana. And so I'm just so used to trees and kind of privacy. My dad has 10 acres of land now. And when I moved up to Mason, we kind of took what we could get. And I thought that we were building on a wooded lot, but you know how it goes. They filled in some of the woods. They filled in a pond and built a bunch of houses behind us. And so when the market got super hot, I thought, let's just see if we can sell this. And it sold in 3 hours, which then meant that's great. And we got a great price, but where in the heck are we going to live? So we're just waiting for a friend of ours actually is selling his home, but it won't be ready for a couple of months. So yeah, and it's private and it's just a great backyard where, you know, eventually maybe someday we'll have a pool or something. So yeah.
So, I mean, I mentioned earlier in the beginning of the podcast to our listeners that one of the reasons why what made me think about having you on was that you've been here 20 years. And after growing up here and coming back, of course, yeah, like many right? people do. But I just feel like we have a little bit of the same trajectory. I can remember seeing you were an assignment reporter. I can remember seeing you at the courthouse sometimes. And yes. I was new too. So I'm like 6 months behind you for my 20th anniversary here. And how amazing it is to cover Cincinnati. And then, well, maybe not as close as you, I also do work with my husband.
So who would ever do that, right?
So I was like, this is the perfect time to have you on.
You know, here's what, it's funny because I think some people think, of course, we're super crazy. And there are days where we get on each other's nerves for sure. But at the same time, we have had major news stories, you know, just recently when we had, you know, well, which mass shooting are we going to talk about, right? But when, you know, 21 people were killed and 19 of them were children. And it really hit me. It was reminiscent of Sandy Hook. And for him to, for Mike to know and get it and understand that that's going to be a really tough news day, or maybe in the morning, I'm still going to need to talk about it. I really love that because I think it's really hard for people. And I would liken it to, I'm sure, police officers and ER doctors and nurses and maybe attorneys, you know, people who have those kind of jobs that you really take things home with you and it changes day to day. It's really nice to have that partner in life who gets it and who isn't sick of talking about it, or who doesn't say, you know, I don't want to hear about this, you know? So I really feel like in a way I've been so lucky that I found somebody who cares just as much about the job as I do. And maybe he's not as emotional by any means as I am, but I'm sure, don't you feel that way, Sharon, that sometimes if you're having a stressful work day, that your partner gets it, that they understand what it's like.
No, 100%. Or the long work hours, right? Like,
yeah,
they're like exactly. Sometimes, you know, it's not exactly a 9-to-5 job.
No, and that's the other thing. You know, there are many times where we might get called in on a Saturday or a Sunday, or, you know, we get called in early because something's happening locally. It was, you know, just a month or so ago that we had, you know, the big scare at the Hyde Park or the Oakley Target yeah. store, where the initial reports coming in was that it was, you know, a mass shooter, which thank goodness that wasn't it. It was an incident out in the parking lot. But I had a doctor's appointment that was actually an important appointment. I, you know, had a breast cancer scare. Thank goodness it was not that. But I needed to do a follow-up. And most, you know, people, most spouses would say, what do you mean you're going to blow off that important appointment to go into work? But that's what our job is, right? That's what we do. And if I hear, and I knew something was going on because I was driving down 71 that day and I saw, you know, like 20 Cincinnati police officers and fire engines racing up 71 North. And I called into the station saying, what's going on? And they said, can you get in here? You know, we think we have a mass shooter. And without even thinking about it, I, you know, canceled my appointment that was really important, but I knew I needed to get into the station and hopefully could get rescheduled, which I was. But anybody else, I think, would not get that. They would say, what do you mean? They're calling you early again, or, you know. And so it's nice to have a partner who just gets it.
In the Coolidge house, we say it's not actually a doctor's appointment unless it's been rescheduled 3 times. For any of us.
It is true.
We never know in the morning like what the day is going to look like. It seems like a good time to whatever, go to the dentist even, and it's not.
And thank goodness, you know, I've had the same, you know, dentists and doctors, or they know, especially, you know, my female doctor, she delivered all 3 of my kids. So they get it. And rarely do I really have to do that, but you know, or I don't have to call the day of or an hour before and cancel. But if something like that happens, they always know that it's legit.
Okay. So take us back. Take us back. Now you're going to come back to Cincinnati and you're going to work for Channel 5. And what did you think your life was going to look like after that?
You know, it's so funny that you ask that because, you know, when you're young, and I was, you know, in my mid to late 20s when I came back, I would have been 28, right? And I was using this as a stepping stone. I'd been working, I'd moved around a couple of times. At that point, I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was moving back for personal reasons. My husband at the time had been living here in Cincinnati for a year and a half or two without me. And so I knew eventually, okay, we've got to get to the same point. So I'll move back home, and then eventually we were going to move to Chicago or New York. That was my dream, to work in a big city. And I really love Chicago because it wasn't quite as big as, or it's not quite as big as New York. And so I came back here in 2002 and thought I would work here for my contract, which would have been 2 years. And then it just fit. I knew that I wanted to start having kids, and I had my first son. And then I got offered an anchoring position because when I came back here, I was a crime reporter. So that's how we got to know each other, Sharon. And so they offered me an anchoring position, and it kept growing and growing. You know, it started off as I would do the 5 o'clock news and then go report for the 11 o'clock news, but they kept extending me. I then started anchoring the 5:30 and the 6 and the 11. And I realized that family was much more important than my job. Now, that's not to say that I don't love what I do, because thank goodness I still love this crazy job. Even on the insane days, even on the down days, even during COVID and politics, where people can be just rotten and awful to you, right?
I've never experienced that, as our listeners know.
Isn't it crazy? it was funny how a few years ago everything just changed, where, you know, and I think in part because there became this whole, you know, saying of, you know, fake news. Look, I will be the first to admit, I can hardly watch the national media most days because it is so biased depending on which station you're watching. You know, you feel like if you want to get the middle, you've got to watch Fox News and MSNBC, and maybe something in the middle, you know, resonates with you. And I hate that as a journalist, because, you know, you and I think are, especially in local news, and do you try to stay out of it? I mean, I always joke and say, I don't usually give my opinion unless it's about puppies or kids or the elderly, right? But it definitely changed a few years ago. COVID made things really, really bad and toxic, and politics, of course. And, you know, I often say to people, look, if I'm getting it from both sides, then I know I'm doing my job. You know, when I get hate mail from the far right or from the far left, I know if I'm getting it from both sides, then I must be doing something right. So yes, things have certainly changed, but I guess going back to why I decided to stay here, it was family became more important to me, and I love being a mom more than I ever thought I would. I remember when I was pregnant with my first child, I was a really huge animal lover. I had 2 dogs at the time, actually 3 dogs. And I remember thinking the week of my delivery that I hope I like this kid as much as I love my dogs. And then, of course, now I say that it sounds so ridiculous because, you know, your children just, it's crazy love at first sight. But so luckily, I've been so blessed here that Channel 5 has been so good to me, guys. You know, I've been promoted, you know, over the years, and now here I am working 20 years in my hometown, still loving what I do. I still get assigned, you know, big political debates or big news stories. You know, when Fountain Square, the shooting there happened, you know, my boss sent me right down to Fountain Square. If there's a story that I really am passionate about, I've really been fighting for ALS patients the last few years, and this is so good to me and my general manager. They're so supportive of letting me do stories that I'm passionate about. And I think they're like that with, you know, a lot of our, you know, great reporters and anchors who want to do, you know, obviously you have to cover the day of news. But if there's an investigation they want to work on, or if there's a big story, they're really good about letting us do those stories we're really passionate about. So I feel so lucky that here I am 20 years later. And, you know, this business has changed so much, and I've seen so many people come and go, some of them because they want to, because they want to move on to either their hometown or a bigger market, but some of them not. Maybe they just weren't a great fit for our company or our station. And so for me to be that person that they've believed in for 20 years, and, you know, our ratings are great. And I just feel so lucky that Cincinnati has embraced me, because, you know, when you're young and you're climbing the ladder, you're just looking for the bigger and better thing and the bigger paycheck. And, you know, when you start out making $14,000 a year, you're just looking for any job that'll pay you, you know, a salary that'll pay your mortgage, that number, or your mortgage, your rent.
That number is not a joke.
It's not. I mean, my very first job offer was in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. And the news director said to me, "Hey, kiddo, don't worry. You know, we are only paying $14,000 a year, but our main anchor works at the Pizza Hut, so you can work at the Pizza Hut and make extra money." So it's, you know, it's a crazy, crazy business. So I just feel beyond lucky that here I am working in my hometown.
So Alex, when we came to Cincinnati, he went to Columbia, and he was like, "I really do want to go back to New York, maybe Chicago." So we're in the same position, and it is an amazing place to raise a family, but it's also a place where we have big city news.
Yes.
And it's not a big city. It's still navigate. It's affordable. It's easy to navigate. But we have all of the news you could ever want in a big city. And we mutually decided, because I would have went with him. Like, I made a promise to him, and had intended to keep it. But he agreed. I mean, he's a business reporter who gets to cover Kroger and Procter & Gamble and, like, the biggest companies.
Yes.
And so that's one of the reasons why we love it here. So what are three stories, like, over the last 20 years that stick out for you?
Well, I mean, Marcus Faisal would be one of them. And, you know, I mean, that was when I was still a reporter. And of course, you know, I think everybody probably, if you're from here, you know that name. He was the little boy who was a foster child, and his foster parents pretended that he went missing. And for days and days, the community's coming together looking for this little boy who they had murdered. And, well, they left in a closet to go on a family trip. I'm sure Sharon remember it.
I do.
They decided he was autistic. They decided they didn't want to take him, so they were going to just wrap and put him in a closet for the weekend and then come back. Well, it was the middle of summer, and that poor baby died in that closet. And then they decided, you know, they came up with this grand scheme that they were going to, you know, pretend he went missing. And it was such a debacle and such a horrific, horrific story. That will be one I never forget. You know, there are so many day in and day out stories, that faces that I can, that flash through my head instantly. You know, people, it's funny, when you're a young reporter, I don't think you realize the gravity of the job, right? You know, for me, I liked people. I loved writing. I wanted to fight for the public's right to know. And then you get into this and you meet people on the worst day of their life. And what I always say to rookie reporters, you know, or even, you know, kids who are in journalism school, interns, I'll say to them, the day you lose your compassion is the day you need to get out of this business, because what is a day of story for us is most of the time a life-changing moment for other people. Their kid, their child has been killed in a car crash, or their home with everything in it has burned to the ground. And so I try not to lose that. So there are all of those stories, but then there are the ones that that I have fought so hard for. And, you know, of course, Fountain Square shooting was horrific and terrible. And, you know, to see people being carried out of there and firefighters and police officers crying is gut-wrenching. But there was a story that Mike and I took on. I actually started this. It was a case where Dr. Durrani, he was a doctor at many of our local hospitals, was performing unnecessary back and spine surgeries. And when I was approached by this, I thought it was just one family I was going to feature them. But when I went out to meet them, I realized that there were hundreds of families. And the problem was, is the doctor took off for Pakistan. So he's gone. We'll probably never get him back here. But these families were still in either physical pain or financial pain because they never got any sort of settlement, right? No, it's very tricky when you're dealing with medical negligence. And to prove that is extremely expensive, especially when you're fighting hospitals who have endless deep pockets. And so when we decided to take on those cases, I mean, I got very close with these families. I was determined, and Mike was determined to help me fight these cases and fight for the stories. Because even our company, you know, my news director and my general manager were so supportive, but they were like, look, you can't get a suit over this. You've got to dot your I's and cross your T's. And thank goodness they supported us because of our stories. These families finally got financial compensation. I'm telling you, Sherry and Jason, some of them died waiting, right? They died waiting for any sort of something to make it okay, right? Something to validate that they were wronged. So that story is one of them. And then most recently, I have been helping ALS patients who, look, you know, we all know Lou Gehrig's disease. It is deadly. It is a death sentence. But at the very least, what we can do for these patients and what we should be doing as lawmakers and part of the FDA is fight for them to give them access to any drug that could prolong their life. And when I took on this case a couple of years ago, it kind of had been sitting in Washington. It kept dying. You know, the bills would die year in and year out. And you have these people, well, there's no fix, there's no cure. But what we saw with COVID was when there is an emergency, the FDA can act quickly when they know people are dying. And they're not doing that with ALS patients. So we have taken on those cases and we've been fighting. I've been fighting for these ALS patients. And I'm telling you, it is one of these stories that rips my heart out every single time I talk with these patients, because I know it's the chances that they're not going to make it. You know what I mean? They're going to die waiting. And luckily we've at least pushed and we got lawmakers, senators and Republicans and Democrats to work together. And they passed a bill that at least grants them access, to these drugs that are known or at least in the process are showing signs of working, right? Now we just have to get the FDA to also speed up that process because these people don't have months and years to wait. So I guess those are the three that just off the top of my head are three that I'm so passionate about because, look, you know, we cover the worst of the worst every day, right? Some of the stuff you see on the news isn't, you know, Sharon, Jason, you know, it's not even all of the horrific details that we get that we can't share with the public because they're so awful. I mean, when you're dealing with a child sex abuse case or you're dealing with a domestic violence case, we can't tell you sometimes even how graphic it was, right? We can't share the video. 2 weeks ago, we had the shooting inside the Walmart store. I believe that was Fairfield Township. We can't even show you the home video or cell phone video that someone sent us because, my God, there's a victim literally on the floor of a Walmart store in a pool of blood. And then there's the other victim who'd been shot in the stomach who's in complete shock. And then you've got customers and people are frantic. I mean, those are the things that just, they will keep you up at night. And what I have learned to do and what my routine kind of is on my drive home from work, I remember I was raised Catholic. And when my priest said to me, when I went to him when I was young and I was 20, and I said, I don't know if what I'm doing is the right thing, because when I get to the scene of something, my job is to get somebody to talk to me, even if they're scared and they don't want to. And I remember this priest, his name was Father Philip, he said to me, Sheree, we need good reporters, just like we need good attorneys and good police officers and good doctors. So your job needs to be to tell their story in the most, you know, objective but yet compassionate way. And then every night on the way home, say a prayer for those people, you know. And that is kind of how I've gotten through it. I've now been doing this job, you know, for over 25 years, 20 here in Cincinnati. And that's what I do. I say a prayer for the moms whose kids were killed in a car crash, or the father who lost their wife to COVID, or whatever it is. I try to just make it be part of my routine.
Sherry, you're incredibly passionate about your job. Sherry's incredibly passionate, you know, about journalism myself. And you know, I told this, I talked to this high school class not too long ago, and I said, hey, the people who are in this today are in it because they're incredibly passionate about it. We've been through a lot in our industry. You're in local TV news, local newspapers. And, it, you know, to hear you talk about these stories is just, you just tell your passion and that you, this is the job for you. I think maybe, you know, Sherry and I in the job we do, you know, we can process a little bit, or we're not on air. And Sherry and I can think back to when the Kyle Plush story happened. Like, I mean, we shed tears together. And, you know, but have you ever shed a tear on air? Have you ever had to fight it back? Like literally as you're reporting the news live?
Yeah. You know, many times, because look, the stories that really always get me, you mentioned Kyle Plush. There are so many stories that rip your heart out, but when it involves kids, I mean, I can't take it. It just hurts me to the core, because I know as a parent, I have a girlfriend who lost a little girl to the flu and strep throat. And I know she carries that with her every single day, but that was something that was, she couldn't have done. She and her family could not have done anything to prevent it. It was a freak thing. But when you see violence claim a child's life, or a car crash of a beautiful girl who was just, you know, a valedictorian who was about to go off and do great things in this world. I mean, I can't make sense of it in my mind. And those are the stories that too often you'll hear my voice crack. There have been many times where Mike will grab my hand because we're in video and he'll kind of give me the sign, like, I'll take over from here, because he knows I'm losing it. Wow. You know, and I have a strategy with when I'm going to cry, if you like bend your face over and like the teardrops just fall to the desk instead of down my face, I can fake it a little more. At least it's like, wow. I don't have mascara running down my face. But look, here's what I say to kids all the time. You know, I love helping aspiring journalists who really are in it for the right reasons. But if I have a girl who's 17 or 20 who says, I want to be on TV, I'll shake my head and say, you can't do it for that reason.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing that you think looks glamorous ends in a couple of weeks. I'll never forget my very first hard story. It was my first job as a reporter. I was in South Bend, Indiana, and there had been a train crash and 5 people died that day. And my job was to go talk to either friends or family of the victims to put a face to the tragedy, right? So I show up at one of the homes, and I knew I had the right house because the whole cul-de-sac was lined with cars. And I was a chicken. I was thinking, I'm not going to go up to that house. I'll go up to the neighbors to see if, you know, if they can approach anybody who would want to talk with me, or maybe they knew this man who had died. Well, before I could even get to a neighbor's house, you know, we're in a marked news car. A woman comes charging out at me, and it's the daughter of the man who died, and she was supposed to be married that weekend.
Aww.
And she was so angry, and she was like, how dare you? I'm apologizing. I'm so sorry. I get back in the car and I call back to the news director, and I'm crying, and I'm with an older photographer who'd been doing this for decades. And I'm saying, Jim, we can't do this. You know, these people are grieving. And he says, kiddo, there's 4 more victims out there. You've got to find another way to tell the story so that people know this wasn't just 5 people who died. It was a father. It was a, you know, a mother. And I guess that, you know, I carry that with me all the time. And those are the stories that I share with young journalists. And I say, if you're not willing to cover that kind of a story in a compassionate way and try to humanize some awful tragedy that's happened, this probably isn't the job for you.
Yeah.
But, and there is so much good that comes out of it. Like when you talk about Kyle Plush, like doing all of that was such one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Listening to that 911 call, like I'm sad now thinking about it. But everything that came out of it is now that every single person who calls 911 hopefully has a better experience. That's an ongoing challenge in the city, and we do still write about it. But, I mean, that's the goal. Like, out of that, to tell that story and have, like, to know a name. You put a name with it in a real case and a real child. And then you just hope that, like, things can get better or safer or...
Yes, yes. And that's what I always say to people when people are like, how do you do your job? I mean, it's so depressing. And I say, because every now and then we really make a big difference. We really help make change. We are able to uncover, you know, shady, whether it's, you know, criminal politics or politicians or, you know, bad police officers or whatever it is. Because we put that platform out there, or how many times, Sharon, Jason, you know this, even if it's just a news blurb, there's been a robbery, you know, Northern Kentucky Police Agency will give us the video, and within hours, they caught a guy who's been on the run for 2 weeks, right? Because we have that platform. And so that's why I constantly remind myself, you know, look, when we had the modern day civil rights uproar that was going on, we were dealing with, you know, a major political divide in this country. We were dealing with COVID, and those days were dark and they were hard. We had reporters that had to go out and day in and day out, be, you know, yelled at and called awful things. And many of them were young. And so maybe they didn't have their families here. And those are the times where I remind people, look, we are trying to fight for what's right. We are trying to give both sides of things a voice. And a lot of times what I'll say to people is, look, you want to get mad at us for not telling your side of the story. Well, then tell it.
Right.
Then talk to us about it. Because if all we're getting is one side, then that's the only thing you're going to get, right? We've got to go on the news at 5:30, 6, 10, and 11. We have to tell the story. If something criminally has gone wrong or something's happened, we're going to do the story, so help us tell both sides of it. And I saw that happen, you know, during the civil rights movement here 2 years ago. I have my cousin's a Cincinnati police officer. Two of them, actually. One of them works for Hamilton County. One of them works for Cincinnati. And my aunt, we were very, very close. She was, you know, rightfully so, angry because every night her daughter is going out on the streets of Cincinnati trying to protect the city, but she felt like we were only telling the story of the protesters, right? And so I said, then get your chief or get a group of police officers together to sit down with us and talk about their frustration, how they're angry about what happened to George Floyd as well. And Jatera McGee is one of our investigative reporters. She's done so much work with now the Cincinnati Police Department. And I think a lot of those stories have been told. But in the heat of the moment, that week, when night after night we're having protests and vandalism going on, you know, sadly, those weren't the stories you were hearing, right?
No, that's true. I always try and remind, like, anyone who's ever like, oh, she only writes bad stories. I'm like, fine, answer my questions and tell me something good. Let's go.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Like, and answer. And look,
how many times have you guys done a story on a child that needs, you know, a handicap accessible van, or, you know, a child who's sick with cancer and the family can't pay their rent or their mortgage? And we step in, and then before you know it, there's a GoFundMe that's raised 5 times what they initially wanted, right? So those are the things that I just, I know you do too. You have to focus on the good that you do and not the bad that you hear about day in and day out.
So you do have a very active, like, social media account. Is it hard to put out your family? Like, is it hard to say, you know, I'm married to my co-anchor? And you do talk about your adorable boys, and it resonates with me a lot since I have a son. And, like, do you feel like you need to put that out there? What's that like?
Well, you know, when I started in this business, it's funny that you asked that, because I remember being like, oh, okay, there's this Facebook thing. And I dug my heels in and I didn't want to do Twitter forever. But then I think I just started to realize that I could use it to my ability. My boss and my news director will constantly say to me, Sheree, we want you to put more news out there on your social media platforms because you have so many, you know, followers. But what I find is if I tweet out or I Facebook something that has to do with, oh, there's been a shooting or a car crash, it might get like 10 likes or something. But what I started to find out is people want to know you. They want to see the human side of you. They like that. I just had a woman over the weekend say, I love that you show yourself without makeup. And what I say to them is, I want you to. Like, I want you to realize that we are imperfect, that anybody can look good with a ton of makeup on and great lighting and a box. I can look really tall with a box. But if I show you that, look, this is me as a working mom. I'm stressed out. Half the time I'm a disaster in my personal life. I hope that humanizes me for people and they see that, you know, okay, you know, maybe they like me more because of it. Or I want to share with them that, you know, when COVID, I didn't talk about it a ton, but when the hate mail would really get to me, I would say to people, listen, I take this job home with me. You know, I'm doing the best I can giving you the information that, you know, the governor thinks you need or businesses, you know, want you to know. I'm just the messenger. You know, I like to think that you don't know where I stand on most things because I really don't delve into politics ever. I mean, there have been times I've hosted debates and I have a really strong opinion about a candidate or something that's happened before the debate that I never share with people because that's not my job, right? I'm not here to give you my personal opinion about a politician or about, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, somebody here, you know, a city lawmaker, a city leader. I'm just here to give you the facts of what transpired on an issue. And so I do find that the social media thing has helped me. Now, there are times where, you know, when Mike and I were dating and our team knew about it, when we decided that we were going to get married, we had a big conversation with our general manager. Mike is much more open about that sort of thing. And my general manager said, well, Sheree, could you please talk about this? Because I don't want people to think we're hiding anything. But my philosophy at first was, well, I didn't talk about my divorce years before. I didn't feel like I needed to talk about, you know, my marriage. But now I'm glad that I did because I do think that people, they want to know. They want to know, you know, who are you with and why don't you talk about your spouse? Or, you know, it was funny. I could sense it over the weekend when I announced that we were in an apartment. People were like, why are you in an apartment? I think
they're following along. Fast,
you know, and I just laughed like, oh no, we're just waiting for another apartment. But, you know, it makes me feel like I'm transparent with people. And honestly, if I could be even more transparent with stuff that goes on with my kids, that makes people would like me even more. You know, it's like, it's...
It humanizes you too.
Yeah, it's like, I think it makes you real and they realize, oh, okay, my kid got detention too. Or, you know, my child made a silly decision about something. I mean, kids are kids. I try to be very, you know, respectful for my boys with their, you know, obviously if they mess up, and they're a teenager, they don't want the whole world to know about it. They're already humiliated. But I do joke about silly stuff like, you know, the room being a disaster or my 18-year-old sleeping in till 2 p.m., you know. And what I say to them is, look, my job provides a lot of great things for you, so you can laugh about it on social media with me.
Do you, and by the way, you celebrate 3 years married to Mike Dardis. Do you guys, do you call him your, is it technically co-anchor or you're both anchors, obviously.
Yeah. So he's my co-anchor. Like, if we weren't married, I would refer to him as my co-anchor, but.
Gotcha.
You know.
But now, does he just refer to you as the boss?
Yes, he does. He always says, you know, happy wife, happy life, which is true, right? And if I'm not at home, then even though I try to obviously always be professional at work, of course, like, I might get annoyed with him and say, you stumbled on that story or something like that. No, I mean, for the most part, we, we balance it really well. And Mike is, it's like the typical situation. Like I'm the more emotional one. He's the more sensible one. So if I'm stressed out because I'm trying to put on two graduations and, you know, and actually I move, he knows to just stay away from me and just say, do you want me to go get you some peanut M&Ms?
No.
That's awesome. Do you guys, yeah. Do you, and obviously now you've been married for you know, 3 years, but do you still get feedback from viewers on like, you just, oh, hey, like you guys could, I noticed where you kind of segued into something here. Was that because you're married or do you have that chemistry on it?
How some people still don't know about it. You know, you think that you kind of threw it out there and it was, you know, the buzz for a week and then it was old news like everything else. So you kind of just assume everybody knows. But every now and then, like I can tell, you know, maybe we're out, you know, to the grocery store together or we're having a drink and you can tell somebody's looking at you weird, like, huh. Why are we together? And we'll say, oh, you know, we're married, right? But, you know, I think I will tell you this, guys. I think I was really nervous about announcing that we were together because it's weird, right? It's I had built my reputation in Cincinnati and Mike the same. And the last thing I wanted people to do was to, you know, suddenly not like us because we're, you know, we're married or think that's weird or anything. And everybody has, for the most part, been so just gracious about it and supportive. And we're so glad you guys are happy. And look, I always say to people, I am not an advocate for divorce. I'm an advocate for being happy. And, you know, both Mike and I were separated at different points. Or I had been divorced for a couple of years, but you know, when you finally find that, it was funny because Mike and I have always been great friends. And yet, it's funny how somebody can be sitting next to you for whatever long, 5 years or whatever that was. And then suddenly one day you look at them differently. You know, it's just, it's the weirdest thing. Like, you're like, wait, you've kind of been like my big brother or my buddy. But then for there to be that connection. And I had dated a couple of people before that ever happened with us. That it was certainly weird for me. So I was afraid it might be weird for Cincinnati. But I've been really lucky that people have been, for the most part, you know, 99% have been really great. Every now and then you get some nasty tweet or some, you know, message that, you know, somebody's snarky. But for the most part, I think because we've been transparent about it, people have been pretty accepting to it.
Yeah.
I think we need to let her get into her news meeting.
You know what?
I have so many more questions too. I wanted to ask you about, you know, you grew up in Cincinnati. Who did you admire or want to emulate on local news? And maybe we'll have to do all that stuff.
Another time. You know, I think, you know, for me, I just, I don't know that there was any one person here in Cincinnati. It was just, I wanted to be as great and successful as they were, right? There were so many great female anchors when I was growing up, whether it was Norma Rashid or Kit Andrews or, you know, there were so many great anchors, especially as women. I just wanted to be, I wanted to feel like, I guess for a long, long time when I came back to Cincinnati and especially when they threw me in the anchoring desk, and I was not great at first. I was a really good reporter, but I was sort of a nervous anchor. And, I wanted to someday feel like I was good enough to sit where Norma Rashid was. Right. Because she was such a force to be reckoned with here in Cincinnati for so long. And, now we've gone to lunch together and she's so beautiful and inside and out and so gracious and supportive. She gets it. You know, so many of the former female news anchors who were just dominant in Cincinnati, Carol Williams, Kitty Andrews, Cammy Durkin, they have been so supportive of me and Trisha and Tanya. We all get together here and there for a girl's lunch. And I love that because I think there's this image that we're all like, you know, we catfight and it's like Anchorman or something, like we're in a back alley and we want to fight each other. And it's just not that way. And I think it's maybe because we all know how demanding this job is. And if we're not supportive of each other, who will be, right?
No, 100%. I think people would be surprised at how much I'm friends with the other reporters who come around City Hall. Like, because they get it. Like, we have something in common that I don't have in common, even with my very best friends. Like, they understand what my life is like.
Right. And unless you're working on something that's kind of a secret investigation, we're almost always covering the same stuff.
Oh, they know. If I don't come around to City Hall, they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah. So we say hi to each other and we're supportive of each other. And I just think you're exactly right, Sharon. It's like, I have so many women in my life who are positive women. I'm such a tomboy off the air that I can't have drama in my life. You know, so if you're a girl who brings drama, I'm not probably very attracted to you as a friend.
I'm 100% the same way. I get plenty of drama in my job. I do not need drama in my real life.
Exactly. And so I do think, though, that a lot of even the successful women in my life, they maybe don't get this job. It's like what we talked about before. It is so intense. It can be so demanding at times that it's nice to have other women and men in the same business who support you.
Well, Sheree, this has been great. And just thanks for, you know, just not all you do as a reporter and your anchor job, but, you know, you really, you do a lot of great work in the community and the work you've done on ALS. My grandmother died of that in 96. And I remember her doctor from Ohio State told her then that, yeah, we'll have a cure within 10 years. And here we are today. Yep. And it still happened. But just thanks for what you do on that. I know you've done stuff with City Gospel Mission and all kinds of different organizations. So not just the work you do on air and, you know, as a reporter, anchor, but the work you do in the community. And thanks so much for joining us here today. Really appreciate it.
Well, you guys are great. You're both so good. I read your stuff all the time. And I just so appreciate you even having me on and keep doing what you're doing. It's so Cincinnati. I love it.
Thanks, Sheree.
Thanks, Sheree.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks again to Sheree and Sherry. That transitions us into our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And pretty cool event coming up this summer, starting here pretty soon.
So second Sunday's on Main Downtown. You know what? We don't really talk about it like on the podcast so much as all, like our big fun moments. But I do find myself downtown at this pretty regularly. It's just really a fun, like if you're walking around downtown or whatever. And so it's on June 12th. It's our first one this summer. I'm almost positive that's our first one on June 12th. It's the 18th year they've been doing them, but it's much more, it's bolder and bigger now. Like you'd notice it now for sure.
They shut the streets down, the street down?
They do. And you just, you know, there's like vendors and everything. So They're pushing it as like the 18th year. They're like kind of talking about it and everything, but it's just, it's so true. Like it's entrepreneurs selling their things and like, and getting to know Main Street. You know, Main Street is such a big part of downtown. And I mean, it was the place to go out for so long, of course, but it just, it has a lot of vibrancy on it, like up north of Central. And I don't know. It's just a really fun event. And so that's June 12th this month. And
it's the second Sunday of every month.
I believe that's why we call it the second Sunday.
When? Through the fall?
It's usually, I mean, they don't do it in the winter. So, you know, when the nice weather ends, that could be any time.
Reminds me of another event on Maine back in the day. Do you remember jamming on Maine? Were you here then?
I was not. Oh. Party in the Park, that I remember.
Jamming on Maine, because I worked at the Cincinnati Post from 2000 to 2004.
Okay, so you're right up there.
And they would close down Main Street and then close down Court. And they brought in all these big like acts and stuff. Like, and they had like three or four stages. And it was a big music festival. Because I remember we always, every year, it was like a pain in the butt because the parking issue, and I'd work weekends.
That's every time downtown something happens, there's parking issues. Yeah. Well, that hasn't changed. But
it was cool because I went too with my buddies, and we would go, and it was jamming on Maine. Some longtime Cincinnati folks will remember
that. I'll be looking forward to you bringing in those pictures, Jason.
I don't know if there are any.
Young Jason Williams.
I do remember people getting up on, you know, like the street crossing signs. Yeah. You know, it says walk or whatever, don't walk. People were getting up on those and standing on them. It's like this band, Seven Mary Three, was like, do you remember them? No. They were like kind of this 90s. They were out of the whole Pearl Jammy sort of
You haven't sang. I was thinking about this.
I'm not going to sing.
But you haven't sang on this podcast in a long time. We haven't talked about music. I think because it's not like one of my primary interests, because that was like pre me on the podcast. It would be a lot of music.
Speaking of, I made up a song when I was a kid.
He is going to sing, you guys. No, Let's go.
I'm not singing yet. I made up a rap song to my cousin and I to at Kings Island. We always go to Kings Island every summer. And we made because her siblings would give us a hard and would give us a hard time because we wouldn't go on any of the roller coasters. We just went on the Beast.
Wow, times have changed.
We went on the Beastie. So we made up a whole song about the Beastie. It was great. And it's now I wrote it for the first time. Whatever, last week.
Oh my gosh.
Talked about it last week. I didn't talk about it. It's now called Woodstock.
I mean, could you still sing it?
I could. I do. I know all the lyrics to it, but I'm not going to do it.
Come on, Phil. Can you give us some background music?
No, I'm not. But when I was there last week, I tell my wife and our friend about it, and none of them asked for me to sing it. So.
Oh, well, they don't sit next to you.
I am not. Maybe I will sing it at some point. It's a little bit of a weird, like my cousin who I did it with, who we made the song together has passed away. And, yeah, so maybe I will at some point. I don't know if I could get through it without crying. So,
aww.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm not going to stop asking you. Just put that out there, everybody.
Yes. I still remember every word to the Beastie.
I can't. I don't even know what to do with this right now.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Appreciate all your feedback and your support of the podcast. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks.